Art thou in thy senses? And I mad, I disordered, I bound? I will as soon think of sending rain as of hanging myself." Those present stood listening to the words and exclamations of the madman. But our graduate, turning to the chaplain and seizing him by the hands, said to him, "Be not uneasy, senor. Attach no importance to what this madman has said. For if he is Jupiter and will not send rain, I, who am Neptune, the father and god of the waters, will rain as often as it pleases me and may be needful." Well, the governor and the bystanders laughed, and at their laughter the chaplain was half ashamed, and he replied, "For all that, Senor Neptune, it will not do to vex Senor Jupiter. Remain where you are, and some other day, when there is a better opportunity and more time, we will come back for you." So they stripped the graduate, and he was left where he was. That's the end of the story.
"So that's the story, Master Barber," said Don Quixote, "which came in so pat to the purpose that you could not help telling it.
Master Shaver, Master Shaver, how blind is he who cannot see through a sieve? Is it possible that you do not know that comparisons of wit with wit, valour with valour, beauty with beauty, birth with birth, are always odious and unwelcome? I, Master Barber, am not Neptune, the god of the waters, nor do I try to make anyone take me for an astute man, for I am not one. My only endeavour is to convince the world of the mistake it makes in not reviving in itself the happy time when the order of knight-errantry was in the field. But our depraved age does not deserve to enjoy such a blessing as those ages enjoyed when knights-errant took upon their shoulders the defence of kingdoms, the protection of damsels, the succour of orphans and minors, the chastisement of the proud and the recompense of the humble. With the knights of these days, for the most part, it is the damask, brocade, and rich stuffs they wear that rustle as they go, not the chain mail of their armour. No knight nowadays sleeps in the open field exposed to the inclemency of heaven and in full panoply from head to foot. No one now takes a nap, as they call it, without drawing his feet out of the stirrups and leaning upon his lance, as the knights errant used to do. And no one now, issuing from the wood, penetrates yonder mountains and then treads the barren, lonely shore of the sea, mostly a tempestuous and stormy one, and finding on the beach a little bark without oars, sail, mast, or tack of any kind, in the intrepidity of his heart flings himself into it and commits himself to the wrathful billows of the deep sea, that one moment lift him up to heaven and the next plunge him into the depths, and opposing his breast to the irresistible gale, finds himself, when he least expected, 3,000 leagues and more, away from the place where he embarked, and leaping ashore in a remote and unknown land, has adventures that deserve to be written, not on parchment, but on brass. But now, sloth triumphs over energy, indolence over exertion, vice over virtue, arrogance over courage, and theory over practice in arms, which flourished and shone only in the golden ages and in knights errant. For tell me, who was more virtuous and valiant than the famous Amadis of Gaul? Who more discreet than Palmerine of England? Who more gracious and easy than Tirante el Blanco? Who more courtly than Lisuarte of Greece? Who more slashed or slashing than Don Belianis? Who more intrepid than Perion of Gaul? Who more ready to face danger than Felix Marte of Hircania? Who more sincere than Esplandian? Who more impetuous than Don Cirongilio of Thrace? Who more bold than Rodamonte? Who more prudent than King Sobrino? Who more daring than Rinaldos? Who more invincible than Roland? And who more gallant and courteous than Ruggiero, from who the Dukes of Ferrara of the present day are descended, according to Turpin in his Cosmography? All these knights, and many more that I could name, Senor Curate, were knights-errant, the light and glory of chivalry. These, or such as these, I would have to carry out my plan, and in that case his majesty would find himself well served, and would save a great expense, and the Turk would be left tearing his beard. And so I will stay where I am, as the chaplain does not take me away. And if Jupiter, as the barber has told us, will not send rain, here am I, and I will reign when I please. I say this that the good Master Basin may know that I understand him.
"Indeed, Señor Don Quixote," said the barber, "I did not mean it in that way, and so help me God, my intention was good, and your worship ought not to be vexed."
"As to whether I ought to be vexed or not," returned Don Quixote, "I myself am the best judge." Hereupon the curate observed, "I have hardly said a word as yet, and I would gladly be relieved of a doubt arising from what Don Quixote has said that worries and works my conscience."
"The señor curate has leave for more than that," returned Don Quixote, "so he may declare his doubt, for it is not pleasant to have a doubt on one's conscience."
"Well, then, with that permission," said the curate, "I say my doubt is that, all I can do, I cannot persuade myself that the whole pack of knights-errant you, Señor Don Quixote, have mentioned, were really and truly persons of flesh and blood that ever lived in the world. On the contrary, I suspect it to be all fiction, fable, and falsehood, and dreams told by men awakened from sleep, or rather still half asleep."
"That is another mistake," replied Don Quixote, "into which many have fallen who do not believe that there ever were such knights in the world, and I have often, with divers people and on divers occasions, tried to expose this almost universal error to the light of truth. Sometimes I have not been successful in my purpose, sometimes I have, supporting it upon the shoulders of the truth, which truth is so clear that I can almost say I have with my own eyes seen Amadis of Gaul, who was a man of lofty stature, fair complexion, with a handsome though black beard, of a countenance between gentle and stern in expression, sparing of words, slow to anger, and quick to put it away from him. And as I have depicted Amadis, so I could, I think, portray and describe all the knights-errant that are in all the histories of the world. For by the perception I have that they were what their histories describe, and by the deeds they did and the dispositions they displayed, it is possible, with the aid of sound philosophy, to deduce their features, complexion, and stature." "How big, in your worship's opinion, may the giant Morgante have been, Señor Don Quixote?" asked the barber.
"With regard to giants," replied Don Quixote, "opinions differ as to whether there ever were any or not in the world. But the Holy Scripture, which cannot err by a jot from the truth, shows us that there were, when it gives us the history of that big Philistine Goliath, who was 7 cubits and a half in height, which is a huge size. Likewise, in the island of Sicily there have been found leg bones and arm bones so large that their size makes it plain that their owners were giants, and as tall as great towers. Geometry puts this fact beyond a doubt. But for all that, I cannot speak with certainty as to the size of Morgante, though I suspect he cannot have been very tall, and I am inclined to be of this opinion because I find in the history in which his deeds are particularly mentioned that he frequently slept under a roof, and as he found houses to contain him, it is clear that his bulk could not have been anything excessive."
"That's true," said the curate, and yielding to the enjoyment of hearing such nonsense, he asked him what was his notion of the features of Reinaldos of Montalban, and Don Roland, and the rest of the 12 peers of France, for they were all knights-errant.
"As for Reinaldos," replied Don Quixote, "I venture to say that he was broad-faced, of ruddy complexion, with roguish and somewhat prominent eyes, excessively punctilious and touchy, and given to the society of thieves and scapegraces. With regard to Roland, or Rotolando, or Orlando, for the histories call him by all these names, I am of opinion, and hold, that he was of middle height, broad-shouldered, rather bow-legged, swarthy-complexioned, red-bearded, with a hairy body and a severe expression of countenance, a man of few words, but very polite and well-bred."
"If Roland was not a more graceful person than your worship has described," said the curate, "it is no wonder that the fair Lady Angelica rejected him and left him for the gaiety, liveliness, and grace of that budding bearded little Moor to whom she surrendered herself, and she showed her sense in falling in love with the gentle softness of Medoro rather than the roughness of Roland."
"That Angelica, Señor Curate," returned Don Quixote, "was a giddy damsel, flighty and somewhat wanton, and she left the world as full of her vagaries as of the fame of her beauty. She treated with scorn 1,000 gentlemen, men of valour and wisdom, and took up with a smooth-faced sprig of a page, without fortune or fame, except such reputation for gratitude as the affection he bore his friend got for him. The great poet who sang her beauty, the famous Ariosto, not caring to sing her adventures after her contemptible surrender,
which probably were not over and above creditable, dropped her, where he says how she received the sceptre of Cathay, some bard of defter quill may sing some day. Or, as he says it, forse altro cantera con miglior plectro. And this was no doubt a kind of prophecy, for poets are also called vates, that is to say, diviners, and its truth was made plain. For since then a famous Andalusian poet has lamented and sung her tears, and another famous and rare poet, a Castilian, has sung her beauty.
"Tell me, Señor Don Quixote," said the barber here, "among all those who praised her, has there been no poet to write a satire on this Lady Angelica?"
"I can well believe," replied Don Quixote, "that if a Sacripante or Roland had been poets, they would have given the damsel a trimming, for it is naturally the way with poets who have been scorned and rejected by their ladies, whether fictitious or not, in short, by those whom they select as the ladies of their thoughts, to avenge themselves in satires and libels. A vengeance, to be sure, unworthy of generous hearts. But up to the present I have not heard of any defamatory verse against the Lady Angelica, who turned the world upside down."
"Strange," said the curate. But at this moment they heard the housekeeper and the niece, who had previously withdrawn from the conversation, exclaiming aloud in the courtyard, and at the noise they all ran out.
Chapter 2, which treats of the notable altercation which Sancho Panza had with Don Quixote's niece and housekeeper, together with other droll matters. The history relates that the outcry Don Quixote, the curate, and the barber heard came from the niece and the housekeeper exclaiming to Sancho, who was striving to force his way in to see Don Quixote while they held the door against him,
"What does the vagabond want in this house? Be off to your own, brother, for it is you and no one else that delude my master and lead him astray and take him tramping about the country."
To which Sancho replied, "Devil's own, housekeeper! It is I who am deluded and led astray and taken tramping about the country, and not thy master. He has carried me all over the world, and you are mightily mistaken. He enticed me away from home by a trick, promising me an island which I am still waiting for."
"May evil islands choke thee, thou detestable Sancho," said the niece. "What are islands? Is it something to eat, glutton and gormandizer that thou art?"
"It is not something to eat," replied Sancho, "but something to govern and rule, and better than four cities or four judgeships at court."
"For all that," said the housekeeper, "you don't enter here, you bag of mischief and sack of knavery. Go govern your house and dig your seed-patch, and give over looking for islands or shylands."
The curate and the barber listened with great amusement to the words of the three, but Don Quixote, uneasy lest Sancho should blab and blurt out a whole heap of mischievous stupidities, and touch upon points that might not be altogether to his credit, called to him and made the other two hold their tongues and let him come in. Sancho entered, and the curate and the barber took their leave of Don Quixote, of whose recovery they despaired when they saw how wedded he was to his crazy ideas, and how saturated with the nonsense of his unlucky chivalry. And said the curate to the barber,
"You will see, my friend, that when we are least thinking of it, our gentleman will be off once more for another flight."
"I have no doubt of it," returned the barber, "but I do not wonder so much at the madness of the knight as at the simplicity of the squire, who has such a firm belief in all that about the island that I suppose all the exposures that could be imagined would not get it out of his head."
"God help them," said the curate, "and let us be on the lookout to see what comes of all these absurdities of the knight and squire, for it seems as if they had both been cast in the same mould, and the madness of the master, without the simplicity of the man, would not be worth a farthing."
"That is true," said the barber, "and I should like very much to know what the pair are talking about at this moment."
"I promise you," said the curate, "the niece or the housekeeper will tell us by and by, for they are not the ones to forget to listen."
Meanwhile Don Quixote shut himself up in his room with Sancho, and when they were alone he said to him,
"It grieves me greatly, Sancho, that thou shouldst have said, and sayest, that I took thee out of thy cottage, when thou knowest I did not remain in my house. We sallied forth together. We took the road together. We wandered abroad together. We have had the same fortune and the same luck. If they blanketed thee once, they belaboured me 100 times, and that is the only advantage I have of thee."
"That was only reasonable," replied Sancho, "for, by what your worship says, misfortunes belong more properly to knights-errant than to their squires."
"Thou art mistaken, Sancho," said Don Quixote,
"according to the maxim, quando caput dolet, etc."
"I don't understand any language but my own," said Sancho.
"I mean to say,"
said Don Quixote, "that when the head suffers, all the members suffer. And so, being thy lord and master, I am thy head, and thou a part of me as thou art my servant. And therefore any evil that affects or shall affect me should give thee pain, and what affects thee give pain to me." "It should be so," said Sancho, "but when I was blanketed as a member, my head was on the other side of the wall, looking on while I was flying through the air, and did not feel any pain whatever. And if the members are obliged to feel the sufferings of the head, it should be obliged to feel their sufferings." "Dost thou mean to say now, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "that I did not feel when they were blanketing thee? If thou dost, thou must not say so or think so, for I felt more pain then in spirit than thou didst in body. But let us put that aside for the present, for we shall have opportunities enough for considering and settling the point. Tell me, Sancho, my friend, what do they say about me in the village there? What do the common people think of me? What do the nobles, what do the gentlemen? What do they say of my valour, of my achievements, of my courtesy? How do they treat the task that I have undertaken in reviving and restoring to the world the now forgotten order of chivalry? In short, Sancho, I would have thee tell me all that has come to thine ears on this subject, and thou art to tell me without adding anything to the good or taking away anything from the bad, for it is the duty of loyal vassals to tell the truth to their lords just as it is and in its proper shape, not allowing flattery to add to it or any idle deference to lessen it. And I would have thee know, Sancho, that if the naked truth, undisguised by flattery, came to the ears of princes, times would be different, and other ages would be reckoned iron ages more than ours, which I hold to be the golden of these latter days. Profit by this advice, Sancho, and report to me clearly and faithfully the truth of what thou knowest touching what I have demanded of thee."
"That I will do with all my heart, master," replied Sancho, "provided your worship will not be vexed at what I say, as you wish me to say it out in all its nakedness, without putting any more clothes on it than it came to my knowledge in."
"I will not be vexed at all," returned Don Quixote. "Thou mayest speak freely, Sancho, and without any beating about the bush."
"Well, then," said he, "first of all, I have to tell you that the common people consider your worship a mighty great madman, and me no less a fool. The nobles say that, not keeping within the bounds of your quality of gentleman, you have assumed the don and made a knight of yourself at a jump with four vine-stocks and a couple of acres of land, and never a shirt to your back. The gentlemen say they do not want to have the nobles setting up in opposition to them, particularly squire nobles, who polish their own shoes and darn their black stockings with green silk."
"That," said Don Quixote, "does not apply to me, for I always go well-dressed and never patched. Ragged I may be, but ragged more from the wear and tear of arms than of time."
"As to your worship's valour, courtesy, accomplishments, and task, there is a variety of opinions. Some say mad but droll, others valiant but unlucky, others courteous but meddling, and then they go into such a number of things that they don't leave a whole bone either in your worship or in myself."
"Recollect, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "that wherever virtue exists in an eminent degree, it is persecuted. Few or none of the famous men that have lived escaped being calumniated by malice. Julius Caesar, the boldest, wisest, and bravest of captains, was charged with being ambitious and not particularly cleanly in his dress, or pure in his morals. Of Alexander, whose deeds won him the name of great, they say that he was somewhat of a drunkard. Of Hercules, him of the many labours, it is said that he was lewd and luxurious. Of Don Galaor, the brother of Amadis of Gaul, it was whispered that he was over-quarrelsome, and of his brother that he was lachrymose. So that, O Sancho, amongst all these calumnies against good men, mine may be let pass, since they are no more than thou hast said."
"That's just where it is, body of my father."
"Is there more, then?" asked Don Quixote.
"There's the tail to be skinned yet," said Sancho. "All so far is cakes and fancy bread, but if your worship wants to know all about the calumnies they bring against you, I will fetch you one this instant who can tell you the whole of them without missing an atom. For last night, the son of Bartholomew Carrasco, who has been studying at Salamanca, came home after having been made a bachelor, and when I went to welcome him, he told me that your worship's history is already abroad in books, with the title of The Ingenious Gentleman Don Quixote of La Mancha. And he says they mention me in it by my own name of Sancho Panza, and the Lady Dulcinea del Toboso, too, and divers things that happened to us when we were alone. So that I crossed myself in my wonder how the historian who wrote them down could have known them."
"I promise thee, Sancho," said Don Quixote, "the author of our history will be some sage enchanter, for to such nothing that they choose to write about is hidden.
"What? A sage and an enchanter? Why, the bachelor Samson Carrasco, that is the name of him I spoke of, says the author of the history is called Cide Hamete Bananaberry."
"That is a Moorish name," said Don Quixote.
"Maybe so," replied Sancho, "for I have heard say that the Moors are mostly great lovers of bananas."
"Thou must have mistaken the surname of this Cide, which means in Arabic Lord, Sancho," observed Don Quixote.
"Very likely," replied Sancho. "But if your worship wishes me to fetch the bachelor, I will go for him in a twinkling."
"Thou wilt do me great pleasure, my friend," said Don Quixote, "for what thou hast told me has amazed me, and I shall not eat a morsel that will agree with me until I have heard all about it."
"Then I am off," said Sancho,
and leaving his master he went in quest of the bachelor, with whom he returned in a short time, and, all three together, they had a very droll colloquy. Chapter 3 Of the laughable conversation that passed between Don Quixote, Sancho Panza, and the bachelor Samson Carrasco. Don Quixote remained very deep in thought, waiting for the bachelor Carrasco, from whom he was to hear how he himself had been put into a book, as Sancho said. And he could not persuade himself that any such history could be in existence, for the blood of the enemies he had slain was not yet dry on the blade of his sword, and now they wanted to make out that his mighty achievements were going about in print. For all that, he fancied some sage, either a friend or an enemy, might, by the aid of magic, have given them to the press. If a friend, in order to magnify and exalt them above the most famous ever achieved by any knight-errant. If an enemy, to bring them to naught and degrade them below the meanest ever recorded of any low squire, though, as he said to himself, the achievements of squires never were recorded. If, however, it were the fact that such a history were in existence, it must necessarily, being the story of a knight-errant, be grandiloquent, lofty, imposing, grand, and true. With this he comforted himself somewhat, though it made him uncomfortable to think that the author was a Moor, judging by the title of Cide, and that no truth was to be looked for from Moors, as they are all impostors, cheats, and schemers. He was afraid he might have dealt with his love affairs in some indecorous fashion that might tend to the discredit and prejudice of the purity of his lady Dulcinea del Toboso. He would have had him set forth the fidelity and respect he had always observed towards her, spurning queens, empresses, and damsels of all sorts, and keeping in check the impetuosity of his natural impulses. Absorbed and wrapped up in these and diverse other cogitations, he was found by Sancho and Carrasco, whom Don Quixote received with great courtesy. The bachelor, though he was called Samson, was of no great bodily size, but he was a very great wag. He was of a sallow complexion, but very sharp-witted, somewhere about 24 years of age, with a round face, a flat nose, and a large mouth, all indications of a mischievous disposition, and a love of fun and jokes. And of this he gave a sample as soon as he saw Don Quixote, by falling on his knees before him and saying, "Let me kiss your mightiness's hand, Señor Don Quixote of La Mancha, for by the habit of St. Peter that I wear, though I have no more than the first 4 orders, your worship is one of the most famous knights-errant that have ever been, or will be, all the world over. A blessing on Cide Hamete Benengeli, who has written the history of your great deeds, and a double blessing on that connoisseur who took the trouble of having it translated out of the Arabic into our Castilian vulgar tongue for the universal entertainment of the people." Don Quixote made him rise, and said, "So then, it is true that there is a history of me, and that it was a Moor and a sage who wrote it."
"So true is it, senor," said Samson, "that my belief is there are more than 12,000 volumes of the said history in print this very day. Only ask at Portugal, Barcelona, and Valencia, where they have been printed, and moreover there is a report that it is being printed at Antwerp, and I am persuaded there will not be a country or language in which there will not be a translation of it."
"One of the things," here observed Don Quixote, "that ought to give most pleasure to a virtuous and eminent man, is to find himself in his lifetime in print and in type, familiar in people's mouths with a good name. I say with a good name, for if it be the opposite, then there is no death to be compared to it."
"If it goes by good name and fame," said the bachelor, "your worship alone bears away the palm from all the knights-errant. For the Moor in his own language and the Christian in his have taken care to set before us your gallantry, your high courage in encountering dangers, your fortitude in adversity, your patience under misfortunes as well as wounds, the purity and continence of the platonic loves of your worship and my lady Doña Dulcinea del Toboso.
I never heard my lady Dulcinea called Doña, observed Sancho here. Nothing more than the lady Dulcinea del Toboso, so here already the history is wrong.
That is not an objection of any importance, replied Carrasco.
Certainly not, said Don Quixote.
But tell me, Señor Bachelor, what deeds of mine are they that are made most of in this history?
On that point, replied the bachelor, opinions differ as tastes do. Some swear by the adventure of the windmills that your worship took to be Briareuses and giants. Others by that of the fulling mills. One cries up the description of the two armies that afterwards took the appearance of two droves of sheep. Another that of the dead body on its way to be buried at Segovia. A third says the liberation of the galley slaves is the best of all, and a fourth that nothing comes up to the affair with the Benedictine giants and the battle with the valiant Biscayan.
Tell me, Señor Bachelor, said Sancho at this point, does the adventure with the Yanguesans come in when our good Rocinante went hankering after dainties?
The sage has left nothing in the ink-bottle, replied Samson. He tells all and sets down everything, even to the capers that worthy Sancho cut in the blanket.
I cut no capers in the blanket, returned Sancho. In the air I did, and more of them than I liked.
There is no human history in the world, I suppose, said Don Quixote, that has not its ups and downs, but more than others such as deal with chivalry, for they can never be entirely made up of prosperous adventures.
For all that, replied the bachelor, there are those who have read the history who say they would have been glad if the author had left out some of the countless cudgelings that were inflicted on Señor Don Quixote in various encounters.
That's where the truth of the history comes in, said Sancho.
At the same time, they might fairly have passed them over in silence, observed Don Quixote, for there is no need of recording events which do not change or affect the truth of the history if they tend to bring the hero of it into contempt. Aeneas was not, in truth and earnest, so pious as Virgil represents him, nor Ulysses so wise as Homer describes him.
That is true, said Samson, but it is one thing to write as a poet, another to write as a historian. The poet may describe or sing things not as they were, but as they ought to have been, but the historian has to write them down not as they ought to have been, but as they were, without adding anything to the truth or taking anything from it.
Well, then, said Sancho, if this Señor Moore goes in for telling the truth, no doubt among my master's drubbings mine are to be found, for they never took the measure of his worship's shoulders without doing the same for my whole body. But I have no right to wonder at that, for, as my master himself says, the members must share the pain of the head.
You are a sly dog, Sancho, said Don Quixote.
If faith, you have no want of memory when you choose to remember.
If I were to try and forget the thwacks they gave me, said Sancho, my wheels would not let me, for they are still fresh on my ribs.
Hush, Sancho, said Don Quixote,
and don't interrupt the bachelor, whom I entreat to go on and tell all that is said about me in this history.
And about me, said Sancho, for they say, too, that I am one of the principal parsonages in it.
Personages, not parsonages, friend Sancho, said Samson.
What? Another word-catcher, said Sancho. If that's to be the way, we shall not make an end in a lifetime.
May God shorten mine, Sancho, returned the bachelor, if you are not the second person in the history, and there are even some who would rather hear you talk than the cleverest in the whole book. Though there are some, too, who say you showed yourself over-credulous in believing there was any possibility in the government of that island offered you by Señor Don Quixote.
There is still sunshine on the wall, said Don Quixote, and when Sancho is somewhat more advanced in life, with all the experience that years bring, he will be fitter and better qualified for being a governor than he is at present.
By God, master, said Sancho, the island that I cannot govern with the years I have, I'll not be able to govern with the years of Methuselah. The difficulty is that the said island keeps its distance somewhere, I know not where, and not that there is any want of head in me to govern it.
Leave it to God, Sancho, said Don Quixote, for all will be, and perhaps better than you think. No leaf on the tree stirs but by God's will.
That is true, said Samson. And if it be God's will, there will not be any want of 1,000 islands, much less one, for Sancho to govern.
I have seen governors in these parts, said Sancho,
that are not to be compared to my shoe-sole, and for all that they're called your lordship and served on silver.
Those are not governors of islands, observed Samson, but of other governments of an easier kind. Those that govern islands must at least be competent grammarians.
I could manage the grey mare well enough, said Sancho, but for the rest I don't know what it is. But leaving this matter of the government in God's hands to send me wherever it may be most to his service, I may tell you, Señor Bachelor Samson Carrasco, it has pleased me beyond measure that the author of this history should have spoken of me in such a way that what is said of me gives no offence. For on the faith of a true squire, if he had said anything about me that was at all unbecoming an old Christian such as I am, the deaf would have heard of it.
That would be working miracles, said Samson.
Miracles or no miracles, said Sancho, let everyone mind how he speaks or writes about people, and not set down at random the first thing that comes into his head.
One of the faults they find with his history, said the bachelor, is that its author inserted in it a novel called The Ill-Advised Curiositeer. Not that it is bad or ill-told, but that it is out of place and has nothing to do with the history of his worship Señor Don Quixote.
I will bet the son of a dog has mixed the cabbages in the fruit baskets, said Sancho.
Then I say, said Don Quixote, the author of my history was no sage, but some ignorant chatterer who, in a haphazard and heedless way, set about writing it, let it turn out as it might, just as Urbaneja, the painter of Ubeda, used to do, who, when they asked him what he was painting, answered, what it may turn out. Sometimes he would paint a cock in such a fashion, and so unlike, that he had to write alongside of it in Gothic letters, this is a cock. And so it will be with my history, which will require a commentary to make it intelligible.
No fear of that, returned Samson, for it is so plain that there is nothing in it to puzzle over. The children turn its leaves, the young people read it, the grown men understand it, the old folk praise it. In a word, it is so thumbed and read and got by heart by people of all sorts that the instant they see any lean hack, they say, there goes Rocinante! And those that are most given to reading it are the pages, for there is not a lord's antechamber where there is not a Don Quixote to be found. One takes it up if another lays it down, this one pounces upon it and that begs for it. In short, the said history is the most delightful and least injurious entertainment that has been hitherto seen, for there is not to be found in the whole of it even the semblance of an immodest word, or a thought that is other than Catholic.
To write any other way, said Don Quixote, would not be to write truth, but falsehood. And historians who have recourse to falsehood ought to be burned like those who coin false money. And I know not what could have led the author to have recourse to novels and irrelevant stories, when he had so much to write about in mine. No doubt he must have gone by the proverb, with straw or with hay, etc., for by merely setting forth my thoughts, my sighs, my tears, my lofty purposes, my enterprises, he might have made a volume as large or larger than all the works of El Tostado would make up. In fact, the conclusion I arrive at, Señor Bachelor, is that to write histories or books of any kind, there is need of great judgment and a ripe understanding. To give expression to humour and write in a strain of graceful pleasantry is the gift of great geniuses. The cleverest character in comedy is the clown, for he who would make people take him for a fool must not be one. History is, in a measure, a sacred thing, for it should be true, and where the truth is, there God is. But notwithstanding this, there are some who write and fling books broadcast on the world as if they were fritters. "There is no book so bad, but it has something good in it," said the bachelor.
"No doubt of that," replied Don Quixote. "But it often happens that those who have acquired and attained a well-deserved reputation by their writings lose it entirely or damage it in some degree when they give them to the press."
"The reason for that," said Samson, "is that as printed works are examined leisurely, their faults are easily seen, and the greater the fame of the writer, the more closely are they scrutinized. Men famous for their genius, great poets, illustrious historians, are always, or most commonly, envied by those who take a particular delight and pleasure in criticizing the writings of others without having produced any of their own."
"That is no wonder," said Don Quixote, "for there are many divines who are no good for the pulpit, but excellent in detecting the defects or excesses of those who preach."
"All that is true, Señor Don Quixote," said Carrasco. but I wish such fault-finders were more lenient and less exacting, and did not pay so much attention to the spots on the bright sun of the work they grumble at. For if, aliquando bonus dormitat Homerus, sometimes the good Homer nods, they should remember how long he remained awake to shed the light of his work with as little shade as possible. And perhaps it may be that what they find fault with may be moles that sometimes heighten the beauty of the face that bears them. And, so I say, very great is the risk to which he who prints a book exposes himself, for of all impossibilities, the greatest is to write one that will satisfy and please all readers.
That which treats of me must have pleased few, said Don Quixote.
Quite the contrary, said the bachelor, for, as stultorum infinitum est numerus, the number of fools is limitless, innumerable are those who have relished the said history. But some have brought a charge against the author's memory, inasmuch as he forgot to say who the thief was who stole Sancho's Dapple. For it is not stated there, but only to be inferred from what is set down, that he was stolen. And a little farther on we see Sancho mounted on the same ass without any reappearance of it. They say, too, that he forgot to state what Sancho did with those 100 crowns that he found in the valise in the Sierra Morena, as he never alludes to them again, and there are many who would be glad to know what he did with them, or what he spent them on, for it is one of the serious omissions of the work.
"Señor Samson, I am not in a humour now for going into accounts or explanations," said Sancho, "for there's a sinking of the stomach come over me, and unless I doctor it with a couple of sups of the old stuff, it will put me on the thorn of Santa Lucia. I have it at home, and my old woman is waiting for me. After dinner I'll come back and will answer you and all the world every question you may choose to ask, as well about the loss of the ass as about the spending of the 100 crowns.
And without another word or waiting for a reply, he made off home. Don Quixote begged and entreated the bachelor to stay and do penance with him. The bachelor accepted the invitation and remained. A couple of young pigeons were added to the ordinary fare. At dinner they talked chivalry, Carrasco fell in with his host's humour, the banquet came to an end, they took their afternoon sleep, Sancho returned, and their conversation was resumed. Chapter 4. In which Sancho Panza gives a satisfactory reply to the doubts and questions of the bachelor Samson Carrasco, together with other matters worth knowing and telling. Sancho came back to Don Quixote's house, and returning to the late subject of conversation, he said,
"As to what Señor Samson said, that he would like to know by whom or how or when my ass was stolen, I say in reply that the same night we went into the Sierra Morena, flying from the Holy Brotherhood after that unlucky adventure of the galley-slaves, and the other of the corpse that was going to Segovia, my master and I ensconced ourselves in a thicket. And there, my master leaning on his lance, and I seated on my dapple, battered and weary with the late frays, we fell asleep as if it had been on 4 feather mattresses. And I in particular slept so sound that, whoever he was able to come and prop me up on 4 stakes, which he put under the 4 corners of the pack-saddle, in such a way that he left me mounted on it and took away dapple from under me without my feeling it."
"That is an easy matter," said Don Quixote. "And it is no new occurrence, for the same thing happened to Sacripante at the siege of Albracca. The famous thief Brunello, by the same contrivance, took his horse from between his legs."
"Day came," continued Sancho, "and the moment I stirred the stakes gave way, and I fell to the ground with a mighty come down. I looked about for the ass, but could not see him. The tears rushed to my eyes, and I raised such a lamentation that, if the author of our history has not put it in, he may depend upon it he has left out a good thing. Some days after, I know not how many, travelling with her ladyship, the Princess Micomicona, I saw my ass, and mounted upon him, in the dress of a gypsy, was that Gines de Pasamonte, the great rogue and rascal that my master and I freed from the chain."
"That is not where the mistake is," replied Samson. "It is that, before the ass had turned up, the author speaks of Sancho as being mounted on it."
"I don't know what to say to that," said Sancho, "unless that the historian made a mistake. Or perhaps it might be a blunder of the printers."
"No doubt that's it," said Samson.
"But what became of the 100 crowns? Did they vanish?"
To which Sancho answered,
I spent them for my own good and my wife's and my children's, and it is they that have made my wife bear so patiently all my wanderings on highways and byways in the service of my master Don Quixote. For if, after all this time, I had come back to the house without a rap and without the ass, it would have been a poor lookout for me. And if anyone wants to know anything more about me, here I am, ready to answer the king himself in person. And it is no affair of anyone's whether I took or did not take, whether I spent or did not spend. For the wax that were given me in these journeys were to be paid for in money. Even if they were valued at no more than 4 maravedis apiece, another 100 crowns would not pay me for half of them. Let each look to himself and not try to make out white black and black white. For each of us is as God made him, aye, and often worse.
I will take care, said Carrasco, to impress upon the author of the history that, if he prints it again, he must not forget what worthy Sancho has said, for it will raise it a good span higher.
"'Is there anything else to correct in the history, Señor Bachelor?'
asked Don Quixote.
"'No doubt there is,' replied he, "'but not anything that will be of the same importance as those I have mentioned.
"'Does the author promise a second part at all?'
said Don Quixote.
"'He does promise one,' replied Samson, "'but he says he has not found it, nor does he know who has got it, "'and we cannot say whether it will appear or not.' And so, on that head, as some say that no second part has ever been good, and others that enough has already been written about Don Quixote, it is thought there will be no second part, though some, who are jovial rather than saturnine, say, "'Let us have more Quixotades, let Don Quixote charge and Sancho chatter, and no matter what it may turn out, we shall be satisfied with that.'
"'And what does the author mean to do?' said Don Quixote.
"'What?' replied Samson. "'Why, as soon as he has found the history which he is now searching for with extraordinary diligence, he will at once give it to the press, moved more by the profit that may accrue to him from doing so than by any thought of praise.'
Whereat Sancho observed, "'The author looks for money and profit, does he? It will be a wonder if he succeeds, for it will be only hurry, hurry with him, like the tailor on Easter Eve, and works done in a hurry are never finished as perfectly as they ought to be.' Let Master Moore, or whatever he is, pay attention to what he is doing, and I and my master will give him as much grouting ready to his hand in the way of adventures and accidents of all sorts as would make up not only one second part, but 100. The good man fancies, no doubt, that we are fast asleep in the straw here, but let him hold up our feet to be shod, and he will see which foot it is we go lame on. All I say is that if my master would take my advice, we would now be afield, redressing outrages and righting wrongs, as is the use and custom of good knights errant.
Sancho had hardly uttered these words when the neighing of Rocinante fell upon their ears, which neighing Don Quixote accepted as a happy omen, and he resolved to make another sally in 3 or 4 days from that time. Announcing his intention to the bachelor, he asked his advice as to the quarter in which he ought to commence his expedition, and the bachelor replied that in his opinion he ought to go to the kingdom of Aragon and the city of Saragossa, where there were to be certain solemn joustings at the festival of St. George, at which he might win renown above all the knights of Aragon, which would be winning it above all the knights of the world. He commended this very praiseworthy and gallant resolution, but admonished him to proceed with greater caution in encountering dangers, because his life did not belong to him, but to all those who had need of him to protect and aid them in their misfortunes.
"'There's where it is what I abominate, Señor Samson,' said Sancho here. "'My master will attack 100 armed men as a greedy boy would 6 melons. Body of the world, Señor Bachelor! There is a time to attack, and a time to retreat, and it is not to be always Santiago and close Spain. Moreover, I have heard it said, and I think by my master himself, if I remember rightly, that the mean of valour lies between the extremes of cowardice and rashness, and if that be so, I don't want him to fly without having good reason or to attack when the odds make it better not.' But above all things, I warn my master that if he is to take me with him, it must be on the condition that he is to do all the fighting, and that I am not to be called upon to do anything except what concerns keeping him clean and comfortable. In this I will dance attendance on him readily. But to expect me to draw a sword, even against rascally churls of the hatchet and hood, is idle. I don't set up to be a fighting man, Señor Samson, but only the best and most loyal squire that ever served knight-errant. And if my master, Don Quixote, in consideration of my many faithful services, is pleased to give me some island of the many his worship says one may stumble on in these parts, I will take it as a great favour,
and if he does not give it to me, I was born like everyone else, and a man must not live in dependence on anyone except God. And what is more, my bread will taste as well, and perhaps even better, without a government than if I were a governor. And how do I know but that in these governments the devil may have prepared some trip for me to make me lose my footing and fall and knock my grinders out? Sancho, I was born, and Sancho, I mean to die. But for all that, if heaven were to make me a fair offer of an island, or something else of the kind, without much trouble and without much risk, I'm not such a fool as to refuse it. For they say, too, when they offer thee a heifer, run with a halter, and when good luck comes to thee, take it in.
Brother Sancho, said Carrasco, you have spoken like a professor. But for all that, put your trust in God and in Señor Don Quixote, for he will give you a kingdom, not to say an island.
It is all the same to me, be it more or be it less, replied Sancho, though I can tell Señor Carrasco that my master would not throw the kingdom he might give me into a sack all in holes, for I have felt my own pulse, and I find myself sound enough to rule kingdoms and govern islands, and I have before now told my master as much.
Take care, Sancho, said Samson. Honours change manners, and perhaps when you find yourself a governor, you won't know the mother that bore you.
That may hold good of those that are born in the ditches, said Sancho, not of those who have the fat of an old Christian 4 fingers deep on their souls, as I have. Nay, only look at my disposition. Is that likely to show ingratitude to anyone?
God grant it, said Don Quixote. We shall see when the government comes. And I seem to see it already.
He then begged of the bachelor, if he were a poet, to do him the favour of composing some verses for him, conveying the farewell he meant to take of his lady Dulcinea del Toboso, and to see that a letter of her name was placed at the beginning of each line, so that, at the end of the verses, Dulcinea del Toboso might be read by putting together the first letters. The bachelor replied that, although he was not one of the famous poets of Spain, who were, they said, only 3½, he would not fail to compose the required verses, though he saw a great difficulty in the task, as the letters which made up the name were 17. So if he made 4 ballad stanzas of 4 lines each, there would be a letter over, and if he made them of 5, what they call decimas or redondillas, there were 3 letters short. Nevertheless, he would try to drop a letter as well as he could, so that the name Dulcinea del Toboso might be got into 4 ballad stanzas.
"It must be by some means or other," said Don Quixote, "for unless the name stands there plain and manifest, no woman would believe the verses were made for her."
They agreed upon this, and that the departure should take place in 3 days from that time. Don Quixote charged the bachelor to keep it a secret, especially from the curate and Master Nicholas, and from his niece and the housekeeper, lest they should prevent the execution of his praiseworthy and valiant purpose. Carrasco promised all, and then took his leave, charging Don Quixote to inform him of his good or evil fortunes whenever he had an opportunity. And thus they bade each other farewell, and Sancho went away to make the necessary preparations for their expedition. Chapter 5 Of the shrewd and droll conversation that passed between Sancho Panza and his wife Teresa Panza, and other matters worthy of being duly recorded. The translator of this history, when he comes to write this 5th chapter, says that he considers it apocryphal, because in it Sancho Panza speaks in a style unlike that which might have been expected from his limited intelligence, and says things so subtle that he does not think it possible he could have conceived them. However, desirous of doing what his task imposed upon him, he was unwilling to leave it untranslated, and therefore he went on to say, "Sancho came home in such glee and spirits that his wife noticed his happiness a bow shot off, so much so that it made her ask him, 'What have you got, Sancho, friend, that you are so glad?' To which he replied, 'Wife, if it were God's will, I should be very glad not to be so well pleased as I show myself.'
"'I don't understand you, husband,' said she, "'and I don't know what you mean by saying you would be glad if it were God's will not to be well pleased. For, fool as I am, I don't know how one can find pleasure in not having it.'
"'Hark ye, Teresa,' replied Sancho, "'I am glad because I have made up my mind to go back to the service of my master Don Quixote, who means to go out a 3rd time to seek for adventures. And I am going with him again, for my necessities will have it so, and also the hope that cheers me with the thought that I may find another 100 crowns like those we have spent, though it makes me sad to have to leave thee and the children.
and if God would be pleased to let me have my daily bread, dry shod and at home, without taking me out into the byways and crossroads, and he could do it at small cost by merely willing it, it is clear my happiness would be more solid and lasting. For the happiness I have is mingled with sorrow at leaving thee. So that I was right in saying I would be glad, if it were God's will, not to be well pleased.
"Look here, Sancho," said Teresa. "Ever since you joined on to a knight-errant, you talk in such a roundabout way that there is no understanding you."
"It is enough that God understands me, wife," replied Sancho, "for he is the understander of all things." "That will do. But mind, sister, you must look to Dapple carefully for the next 3 days, so that he may be fit to take arms. Double his feed, and see to the pack-saddle and other harness, for it is not to a wedding we are bound, but to go round the world, and play at give-and-take with giants and dragons and monsters, and hear hissings and roarings and bellowings and howlings. And even all this would be lavender, if we had not to reckon with young Gessens and enchanted moors."
"I know well enough, husband," said Teresa, "that squires errant don't eat their bread for nothing, and so I will be always praying to our Lord to deliver you speedily from all that hard fortune."
"I can tell you, wife," said Sancho, "if I did not expect to see myself governor of an island before long, I would drop down dead on the spot."
"Nay then, husband," said Teresa, "let the hen live, though it be with her pip, and let the devil take all the governments in the world. You came out of your mother's womb without a government, you have lived until now without a government, and when it is God's will, you will go or be carried to your grave without a government. How many there are in the world who live without a government, and continue to live all the same, and are reckoned in the number of the people? The best source in the world is hunger, and as the poor are never without that, they always eat with a relish. But mind, Sancho, if by good luck you should find yourself with some government, don't forget me and your children. Remember that Sanchico is now full 15, and it is right he should go to school, if his uncle the abbot has a mind to have him trained for the church. Consider, too, that your daughter, Marie Sancha, will not die of grief if we marry her, for I have my suspicions that she is as eager to get a husband as you to get a government. And after all, a daughter looks better ill-married than well-whored."
"By my faith," replied Sancho, "if God brings me to get any sort of a government, I intend, wife, to make such a high match for Marie Sancha that there will be no approaching her without calling her my lady."
"Nay, Sancho," returned Teresa, "marry her to her equal. That is the safest plan. For if you put her out of wooden clogs into high-heeled shoes, out of her grey flannel petticoat into hoops and silk gowns, out of the plain Marica and you into Doña so-and-so and my lady, the girl won't know where she is, and at every turn she will fall into a thousand blunders that will show the thread of her coarse homespun stuff."
"Tut, you fool," said Sancho, "it will be only to practice it for 2 or 3 years, and then dignity and decorum will fit her as easily as a glove. And if not, what matter? Let her be my lady, and never mind what happens."
"Keep to your own station, Sancho," replied Teresa. "Don't try to raise yourself higher, and bear in mind the proverb that says, 'Wipe the nose of your neighbour's son, and take him into your house.' A fine thing it would be, indeed, to marry our Maria to some great count or grand gentleman, who, when the humour took him, would abuse her and call her clown-bred and clodhopper's daughter and spinning-wench. I have not been bringing up my daughter for that all this time, I can tell you, husband. Do you bring home money, Sancho, and leave marrying her to my care. There is Lope Tocho, Juan Tocho's son, a stout, sturdy young fellow that we know, and I can see he does not look sour at the girl. And with him, one of our own sort, she will be well married, and we shall have her always under our eyes, and be all one family, parents and children, grandchildren and sons-in-law, and the peace and blessing of God will dwell among us. So don't you go marrying her in those courts and grand palaces, where they won't know what to make of her, or she what to make of herself."
"Why, you idiot and wife for Barabbas," said Sancho, "what do you mean by trying, without why or wherefore, to keep me from marrying my daughter to one who will give me grandchildren that will be called your lordship? Look ye, Teresa, I have always heard my elders say that he who does not know how to take advantage of luck when it comes to him has no right to complain if it gives him the go-by. And now that it is knocking at our door, it will not do to shut it out. Let us go with the favouring breeze that blows upon us."
It is this sort of talk, and what Sancho says later, that made the translator of the history say he considered this chapter apocryphal.
"Don't you see, you animal," continued Sancho,
that it will be well for me to drop into some profitable government that will lift us out of the mire and marry Sancho to whom I like, and you yourself will find yourself called Doña Teresa Panza and sitting in a church on a fine carpet and cushions and draperies in spite and in defiance of all the born ladies of the town? No. Stay as you are, growing neither greater nor less, like a tapestry figure. Let us say no more about it, for Sanchica shall be a countess, say what you will.
Are you sure of all you say, husband? Replied Teresa. Well, for all that, I am afraid this rank of countess for my daughter will be her ruin. You do as you like, make a duchess or a princess of her, but I can tell you it will not be with my will and consent. I was always a lover of equality, brother, and I can't bear to see people give themselves airs without any right. They called me Teresa at my baptism, a plain, simple name, without any additions or tags or fringes of dons or doñas. Cascajo was my father's name, and as I am your wife, I am called Teresa Panza, though by right I ought to be called Teresa Cascajo. But where the king goes, there is the law, and I am content with this name, without having the don put on top of it to make it so heavy that I cannot carry it. And I don't want to make people talk about me when they see me go dressed like a countess or governor's wife, for they will say at once, 'See what airs the slut gives herself. Only yesterday she was always spinning flax and used to go to mass with the tail of her petticoat over her head instead of a mantle. And there she goes today in a hooped gown with her brooches and airs as if we didn't know her.' If God keeps me in my seven senses, or five, or whatever number I have, I am not going to bring myself to such a pass. Go you, brother, and be a government or an island man, and swagger as much as you like. For by the soul of my mother, neither my daughter nor I are going to stir a step from our village. A respectable woman and a broken leg should keep at home, and to be busy at something is a virtuous damsel's holiday. Be off to your adventures along with your Don Quixote, and leave us to our misadventures. For God will mend them for us according as we deserve it. Oh, I don't know, I'm sure, who fixed the don to him, what neither his father nor grandfather ever had."
"I declare thou hast a devil of some sort in thy body," said Sancho. "God help thee! What a lot of things thou hast strung together one after the other, without head or tail! What have Cascajo and the brooches and the proverbs and the airs to do with what I say? Look here, fool and dolt, for so I may call you when you don't understand my words and run away from good fortune. If I had said that my daughter was to throw herself down from a tower, or go roaming the world as the Infanta Doña Urraca wanted to, you would be right in not giving way to my will. But if, in an instant, in less than the twinkling of an eye, I put the don and my lady on her back, and take her out of the stubble and place her under a canopy on a dais and on a couch, with more velvet cushions than all the Almohadas of Morocco ever had in their family, why won't you consent and fall in with my wishes?"
"Do you know why, husband?" replied Teresa. "Because of the proverb that says, 'Who covers thee, discovers thee.' At the poor man, people only throw a hasty glance. On the rich man, they fix their eyes. And if the said rich man was once on a time poor, it is then there is the sneering and the tattle and spite of backbiters, and in the streets here they swarm as thick as bees."
"Look here, Teresa," said Sancho, "and listen to what I am now going to say to you. Maybe you never heard it in all your life, and I do not give my own notions, for what I am about to say are the opinions of His Reverence the Preacher, who preached in this town last Lent, and who said, if I remember rightly, that all things present that our eyes behold bring themselves before us and remain and fix themselves on our memory much better and more forcibly than things past."
These observations which Sancho makes here are the other ones on account of which the translator says he regards this chapter as apocryphal, inasmuch as they are beyond Sancho's capacity.
"Whence it arises," he continued, "that when we see any person well-dressed and making a figure with rich garments and retinue of servants, it seems to lead and impel us perforce to respect him, though memory may at the same moment recall to us some lowly condition in which we have seen him, but which, whether it may have been poverty or low birth, being now a thing of the past, has no existence, while the only thing that has any existence is what we see before us. And if this person whom fortune has raised from his original lowly state," these were the very words the padre used, "to his present height of prosperity, be well-bred, generous, courteous to all, without seeking to vie with those whose nobility is of ancient date, depend upon it, Teresa,
No one will remember what he was, and everyone will respect what he is, except indeed the envious, from whom no fair fortune is safe.
I do not understand you, husband, replied Teresa.
Do as you like, and don't break my head with any more speechifying and rhetoric. And if you have revolved to do what you say, resolved you should say, woman, said Sancho, not revolved. Don't set yourself to wrangle with me, husband, said Teresa. I speak as God pleases, and don't deal in out-of-the-way phrases. And I say, if you are bent upon having a government, take your son Sancho with you, and teach him from this time on how to hold a government. For sons ought to inherit and learn the trades of their fathers. As soon as I have the government, said Sancho, I will send for him by post, and I will send thee money, of which I shall have no lack, for there is never any want of people to lend it to governors when they haven't got it. And do thou dress him so as to hide what he is, and make him look what he is to be.